One of the benefits that I've noticed of soul care is that I've really developed deep and meaningful friendships with people. It's one thing to preach to a group of people, but when you sit in your office for an hour and 15 minutes with them every other week, with an individual or a couple, you develop a relationship, a bond, that death itself can't break.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Relate, Refresh, and Restore, where we passionately are committed to offering encouragement and new ideas to those on the front lines of Christian ministry. At Romans 12 Ministries, we come alongside those leaders and families, fighting for their emotional, physical, and spiritual health, for we firmly believe that healthy leaders lead healthy ministries, and where there are healthy churches and ministries, there will be transformation in communities. Welcome again to the Relate, Refresh, and Restore podcast.
During my 30 years in education, I began each Monday with a story which I called Story Time with Mr. Town to my sleepy 8th graders. It was short, usually something personal that occurred recently that had some humor or maybe a lesson that I learned. And over the years, my former students have commented on how much these stories are remembered and how much they meant to them. In fact, one recently told me this, and I quote, "Mr. Town, I don't remember much about your class, but I do remember your stories." And I'm not sure how to take that, but stories are powerful, and our own stories shape so much of how we think, feel, and act. Our guest today is a master when it comes to drawing out one's story to get underneath to the core longings and wounds we each carry. As a full-time pastor, he devotes one day out of the week to come alongside people in what is called soul care. You will not want to miss this episode on diving deep into the stories of our lives and the hope and healing it can bring. Dr. David Ganey is the pastor at Oasis Church in Vail, Arizona. David and his wife, Hope, have been married since 1993. Originally from Alabama, David and Hope have lived in Tucson and have led Oasis since 1997. They have raised four children, Grace, Joy, Faith, and Graham, and have adopted Nicole as an adult. I'm David Town, your host of the Relate, Refresh, and Restore podcast. Well, Dr. David Ganey, how are you?
I'm good.
Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thanks for inviting me.
You know, one of the gifts that God has given us the last couple years has been the influence that you've had on us. And I want to thank you for your time and your investment in the Town family.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And I'm so glad that we get to talk.
Me too.
And I'm just praying that God will use your words to encourage people and refresh people.
Me too.
This is a podcast of stories of hope, and I think you have a lot of those stories. Mm. So one of my first questions is this. I ask it all the time. Is this, as you think about stories of hope and people who have really modeled that for you in your life and have influenced you, who comes to mind?
Probably my friend Rod Hugan. He's one of the pastors at The Village. We first met in 1997, the year we both came to Tucson. He was starting a church called Rock the Desert Ministries, and I was starting a church called Rita Ranch Fellowship. And we eventually started going to lunch, and then it became a weekly lunch, and it's been a weekly lunch since then. So almost every week we go to lunch, and you know, you really have to have a routine if you want to build a friendship. You really have to have a routine. And so Wednesday is now our day that we go to lunch. It wasn't always Wednesday. But over time, he's really asked me provocative questions when I needed to have them. I've had some rough spots in my life, and my wife would pick up the phone and call Rod and say, "David needs a friend." And he would call me and ask how I'm doing. And I'm like, "Did my wife call you?" He's like, "Yes, but it doesn't matter. How are you doing?" And even recently, we went through a really hard time in our church, and my wife and I in particular. And he was just so encouraging and reflected back the stuff that he saw of Christ in me. And when it felt like the whole world was beating me up, he saw the reflection of Jesus in my life. So he has been a strong encourager in my life, and for a pastor, I think it's really important to have a friend who's a pastor that you can gripe to, that you can complain about your congregations to, but who will also call you out when necessary because, you know, he understands where you're coming from.
So that's 25 years of doing a weekly lunch.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people can say they've been doing that.
I don't know. Probably not many.
But the power of that, I think, would be instrumental.
It's deeply impacted my life.
Especially when there's vulnerability and you're listening and that you've built that trust up.
Yeah.
Pastors need that more.
We
all need that more. Wow. So you have a heart for this topic of soul care.
Right.
Give us a kind of a definition of what soul care is.
Soul care is related to counseling, but Larry Crabb decided to change the term at one point from biblical counseling to soul care, because biblical counseling sounds like there's an expert or a professional in the room and then a non-professional. But the more he looked at this, the more he realized that all believers should be taking care of each other's hearts. So the term soul care implies that we're simply caring for someone's soul. And in that sense, you don't have to be a pastor to care for someone's soul. In fact, someone in my congregation or not who's not a pastor can care for my soul. And if we're all brothers and sisters in Christ, then we should be helping each other by holding up a mirror and helping us understand what's going on inside of us, what our motives are, why we're doing what we're doing, how we're really feeling. With a little bit of training, anybody can do that. So soul care is simply helping others understand what's really going on inside of them and where that comes from.
So pastors, you are an advocate that pastors really need to be doing this on a regular basis.
Yeah, I'm a big advocate that pastors should both receive and offer soul care. Even when I was in graduate school, I took one course, one three-hour credit course in counseling. And Dr. Richard Wells, who made a great impact in my life, said that this is a part of what pastors have been doing from the very beginning, is caring for the souls of those in the congregation. And he said this is a significant part of your ministry that's often neglected, but the demand is higher today than it probably ever has been. So I really believe that you can't offer it well unless you also receive it. So I believe that we as pastors and spiritual leaders are all better off if we receive it and give it.
How many do you think pastors actually do this?
I would say it's certainly less than 50%. I would say that probably more than 50% would say they do it, but a lot of what they do is more advice giving, and that's what I used to do. I used to meet with people and simply dispense advice, and that's not what soul care is. So when you understand that soul care is really walking people into God's invitation in the midst of the problem, which is probably a better definition than the one I gave earlier, most of us have never been trained to do that. So probably somewhere between 10 and 25% of pastors.
And so why do you think some pastors are reluctant to do this?
Yeah, so I've had conversations with pastors over the last 17 years about this subject, and I think they really end up being in one of maybe three camps. So some pastors don't do it because they don't know how. Okay, no one's ever told them how. I mean, I really didn't learn how in graduate school. I took one course. When that course was over, I wasn't any better at offering soul care than I was when the class started. So we're not trained in doing it, although it's relatively easy to be trained. It's not easy to do it, but it's easy to receive it. I think some pastors don't do it because they don't feel qualified. You know, Freud and Jung came along at the turn of the 20th century and invented kind of the secular pastor. And the idea is that, before Freud and Jung and Adler and those guys, from the time of Jesus until then, if people wanted help, they went to their local church and a pastor helped them. And then when those guys came along, they offered an alternative to the pastor, but to help people, they had to charge them. So they created this doctor-client relationship. You come to the expert and you pay him money, right? Now, the pastor didn't have to get paid to help people because the congregation pays his salary, so he's available to those in need when they need him. But these the secular psychologists, and initially they all were secular, they came along and said, well, we'll just charge for the privilege of helping you. And they had to create demand, right? The demand before that was all for pastors. Now it's 100 plus years later, right? Fast forward, And it's the opposite, right? Those guys we all feel like are competent and qualified, and then the average pastor feels like he's not. And the sad thing is we have prayer. We have the scriptures. We have the presence of the Holy Spirit. And we have 2,000 years of tradition. Like, we really are qualified to do this. And I think a third reason pastors don't do it is because we don't feel gifted or called. I'll hear pastors say, oh, well, that's not my thing. I send people to someone outside the church. And there's nothing wrong with sending people to other good people. And I send people to good people who just do stuff like soul care and biblical counseling. But I still see some people, and I think all pastors should see some people, because I think this is part of the work of the ministry, just like preaching and visiting the sick and officiating funerals. I think this is a valid part of our ministry, but a lot of pastors feel like they're just not called to do it or gifted to do it. But I really feel like if you look at the scriptures, Galatians 2, carry one another's burdens. One of the ways we as pastors should be helping our flock is by sitting alone with one or maybe a couple and walking them into God's invitation in the midst of their problem so that they can truly follow Christ. And I think that's a part of what we've been called to do, but it's this neglected ministry in the church.
It's interesting that you talked about the history, the turn of the century. So yeah. Really just a little over 100 years ago, mm-hmm. church looked so different.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it's because of the secularization, the people not going to church. Do you think that's part of it? Of you know, that was such a community center piece.
True.
Do you think, I never really thought of that before, but it has changed radically in the last 100 and some years.
A lot's happened, you know, in that time period. But if you think about it, going back, there's a famous Puritan pastor named Richard Baxter. Richard Baxter wrote about being basically a parish pastor. So he viewed all the people in his area, believers and non-believers alike, as part of his parish. And he just took responsibility for everyone who lived near him. Whereas today, and you have churches on top of churches, you know, today you just have a plethora of churches. And in a sense, Christianity is even more fragmented than really ever before. We don't have that same mindset. And there's also a plethora of people offering help, psychologists, you know, and some of those are good people, and I recommend them, and psychiatrists and biblical counselors and lay counselors. And there's so many other people doing this stuff that it just doesn't occur to us that we're supposed to be taking care of people this way.
If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so we can continue to help and serve more ministry leaders and their families. Your partnership means so much to us, and you can donate at Romans 12 Ministries, and it is romans12ministries.org/donate. That's romans12ministries.org/donate. So practically, yeah. I mean, as a pastor of a congregation, how do you then organize your week if you really believe so heartily with the soul care?
Well, I think, okay, so let me just say that I think part of the problem that we have is this idea of pastors being specialists. So one of my convictions that I got from that same professor years ago is that pastors are general practitioners. We're like the GP, but a lot of pastors are specialists. And I think what's happened is, especially in bigger churches where you can specialize a little better than in a smaller church, a pastor can just like preach on Sunday or just be the administrator or just work with students or just work with children. And so I think in larger churches, because you can specialize, a lot of pastors have just gotten the mentality that this is all I do here. Whereas for most of the history of the church, there hasn't been anything like mega churches. So most of the history of the church, pastors have been shepherds of much smaller groups of people, 150 less. And they've realized that they're called to do a little bit of everything. So what I feel is that we've kind of lost the sense in which we're to be a jack of all trades and master a few. And it's okay to have a specialty, like I'm really good at preaching and I'm really good at administration and I've become competent at soul care. So it's okay, I think, to have specialties as long as you don't become a specialist and say, well, I don't do weddings anymore. Well, I don't visit the sick. You know, I don't do soul care. I think that it's unhealthy for us to say that I don't do and then fill in the blank with something that historically pastors have always done. I don't think that's healthy. But I also get that as your church grows larger, you can't do all of it. Maybe you can't do all the weddings, visit all the people who are sick. Maybe you can't do all the soul care. So let me just lead up to the question you asked by saying, I think that it really is different for every single pastor, depending on the size of his church and depending on whether or not he has other people on staff that can take some of that burden away from him. For me, and I pastor a church somewhere in the neighborhood of 150 people on average attendance, and I'm right now the only pastoral staff in our church. So I give one day to this. And so Wednesday's my day, and I have two appointments in the morning and two in the afternoon, and I see people every other week, which means I can handle up to eight appointments, eight different people that I'm meeting with or couples. And that's what I'm full right now. That's what I'm doing. And I think for another pastor, it would be enough to say, I'm just going to do Wednesday mornings or Tuesday mornings. I'm just going to do two appointments a week. And you know what? Even if you only did one appointment a week, That's something. And so I think that pastors should do that because of the impact it has on them and their church. I think they should do some of it.
You know, as we've been working with ministry leaders and families, I've noticed that one of the keys is isolation.
Yeah.
That pastors just feel so isolated. But a lot of times it's choice.
Yeah.
They don't want to get to know, you know, their congregants too closely,
right,
because they've been burned.
Mm-hmm.
Soul care, it gets to the heart of matters.
Absolutely.
And so what would you recommend pastors who are a little bit fragile with soul care and getting to know people pretty closely in their congregation?
That's a great question. I think it actually tackles head on the fear there. You know, we're sort of afraid of people because they've hurt us. I mean, it's not for no reason. That we're afraid of the flock, sheep bite.
Mm.
But one of the benefits that I've noticed of soul care, one of the greatest benefits in my life, is that I've really developed deep and meaningful friendships with people. It's one thing to preach to a group of people, but when you sit in your office for an hour and 15 minutes with them every other week, with an individual or a couple, you develop a relationship, a bond, that death itself can't break. And you get to know them. They get to know you, because one of the ways I think you do soul care well is you offer your own story and vulnerability. And what happens is you develop this very rich relationship that is super healthy. And just to be selfish a little bit, my congregation has loved me through some really hard times in my own life. I've made some really poor choices in the last 24 and a half years as a pastor. And yet I've put a lot of credit in the bank. And so when I make these large withdrawals, they still love me because I was with them when they were struggling with their kid. I was with them when they almost ended their marriage. I was with them when they went through a dark time of depression. So what I have discovered is that if you will love people well like this, they will be your greatest advocates. They will be the ones to defend you when you're not around and people start throwing you under the bus.
Mm.
So I would say this actually fights against that. And it's rich rewarding for me. You know, not every soul care appointment or relationship results in like breakthroughs. But from time to time, I get to see people come to know Jesus, or I get to see marriages healed, or I get to see people come out of something really dark. And that is so rewarding. You know, you don't get to see that on Sunday morning when you're preaching a sermon. You might get a few attaboys and, hey, good message. But in soul care, you can weep with people as God's changing their lives, and it's much more rewarding.
There's nothing, I think, better than hearing somebody's story.
Yeah.
And walking through that story, even if it's very painful.
Yeah.
It's like going camping. I mean, every time I go camping in the past, you know, with people— You get to know them in a whole different way.
Yeah.
Some of it's good, some of it's bad, but the memories that you make when you go camping and then you come back together, there is a bond in this experience of being lost or catching those huge fish or whatever.
Being sleepless, freezing to death at night.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. Most of those stories are like terrible stories, but it bonds us.
But you remember it well later.
They have gone into the long-term memory for sure.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Soul Killer Care is, what you're describing.
It's a good metaphor.
So you've been doing this now for a while. Mm-hmm. Are there some themes that you see in with people, things that so many people are going through? Mm. Because it's so needed now. There's such hurt out there. Yeah. Do you see any kind of general themes?
Yeah. Part of what Soul Care is about is getting beneath the surface problem to what the real problem is. Part of what I believe, and when I train people in Soul Care, part of what I teach is that when people come with a problem, they think the thing, you know, the fighting in the marriage, they think that's the problem. But really, it's the symptom of a deeper problem, which is why we do the things we do. And that's tied to their story. And so it takes a long time to peel back the onion and to find out what is really underneath all of that. But as far as symptomatic behavior, with a lot of younger people, I see a lot of anxiety. Now, I struggle with anxiety, so it hits everybody. But because of the helicopter parent generation, my generation and the boomers have raised, especially with the millennials and Gen Z, we've raised some anxious kids. And so I see a lot of anxiety. I mean, I see everything. Sooner or later, I end up seeing everything. I am amazed by how many people are victims of sexual abuse. And I would say among women that I have seen in my office, and maybe it's skewed because of who we are as a church, I would say that regardless of what studies indicate, the number is closer to 80%+.
Wow.
It's really rare that I walk into a woman's story and there's not sexual abuse somewhere in that story.
Wow.
I see a lot of that. Mm. I see a lot of brokenness. I dealt with a family where the husband was a victim, the wife was a victim. He came to discover that his own father had molested his daughter, and that a nephew had molested his son, and his son had molested another one of his sons. I mean, it was just so deep and so dark, and I see that a lot.
So that iceberg analogy, really, we just see what's on the surface.
Yeah.
And so where's the hope when you describe a family like that?
Yeah.
Where's the hope in that?
Well, you know, that one was easy because when the father came to me and his first comment was, I just found out that, and he named one of his sons has molested, and he mentioned another one of his sons. And I said, what did you do? And he said, I picked up the phone and I called the police. I said, on your son? And he goes, yeah, I went. Can I just thank you for doing that? Because I never, ever hear that. I mean, people circle the wagons in those cases and events, right? They circle the wagons, they defend people, they try to protect their kid. He was protecting the victim. And he knew the best thing he could do for his kid who had acted out was to turn him in and let him have a wake-up call and deal with his stuff, you know? So I was really grateful. I mean, he was a former victim himself, right, this man. So there was some hope in that story right away because of the way he responded, the fact that he was in Soul Care at all, the fact that he was talking about it openly with his wife. I have hope just that people are willing to share their story with me and go back to their own story. But the hope is that we serve a God who raises the dead, and there's always hope. Hmm.
We need to do a part two down the road. Yeah. I want to talk a little more about Potter's Wheel and the impact that's made on so many people, including myself and my wife.
And me.
And we at Romans 12, we have a tagline that says refresh, restore, and relate. And David Gainey, I just need to let you know that you are refreshing people.
Mm. Thank you.
And people need to be refreshed. And I want to thank you so much for what you're doing in this community. Mm. And I'm sure people will have some desires to reach out. How can they get a hold of you?
Well, my email is david@oasisaz.com. And they can reach out that way. if they want to see the courses we offer, they can go to oasisaz.com/register, and we have a list of the courses we offer.
Thanks again for coming in. Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you for joining us today at another episode of Relate, Refresh, and Restore, a podcast sponsored by Romans 12 Ministries. For more information on Romans 12 Ministries, visit us at romans12ministries.org or give us a call at 520-982-5877. May we all continue to be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, and faithful in prayer.